another endearingly shambolic podcast from WeDigPodcasts.com.
Hi, we dig music, and because of this we've kept the music in our podcast at a low background level because we believe that you should support the artist by buying their records and going to their gigs. If you want to hear the songs in full, we've made Spotify playlists of all available music featured in each episode, which you can find on WeDigPodcasts.com. You can also join in the discussion on Facebook and Twitter by searching at WeDigMusicPcast. Finally, if you dig what you're hearing, please subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice, write a review if possible, and tell all your friends that you think would enjoy it. Anyway, enough of my yakking. On with the podcast.
Hello.
Welcome to We Dig Music.
This is a podcast where we talk about music that we dig.
Indeed.
Or sometimes, in my case, music that I do not at all dig. With me, as always, are my comrades and co-hosts, Colin.
Hello.
And Tracy.
Hello.
Today we are talking about Y and Z, letters-wise.
Indeed.
Yola Tenga and ZZ Top.
Indeed. I like the way that you said Y and Z and then ZZ Top.
It's a good way around of doing things.
And
I dig that.
Did you know that this, if you include our pilot episode and our specials that we did in between series 1 and 2 and the 1999 one, this is our 50th episode.
Oh, is it?
So happy 50th us.
I will be celebrating on 69 personally.
Excellent, because we've grown up and mature.
Yes, exactly.
I think Tracy's going to tell us about Yola Tengo.
Tengo are an American indie rock band formed in New Jersey in 84 by...
Hoboken.
Yeah, but I can't pronounce that, so I just said New Jersey.
I think it's Hoboken. It might be Hoboken.
It's Hoboken.
Right,
cool.
There we go. Formed by husband and wife.
You know, like, you spent all of this time Googling things, and you didn't think to Google how to pronounce Hoboken.
I figured I was just going to say New Jersey.
Ah, well.
It's a big place, Tracy. It's a big place.
Yeah. Jersey's a big place, yo.
Jersey.
Formed by husband and wife, Ira Kaplan and Georgia
Hoagland. His name was IRA Kaplan.
It's Ira. It's definitely Ira.
Not pronounced IRA, then?
No.
Or provisional Ira Kaplan.
Or Ira, as I sometimes say it, but Ira.
Yeah, definitely Ira.
No, their back catalogue is vast.
It fucking is.
I
believe daunting is the optimal word.
Yeah, they've got 15 studio albums proper, plus compilation albums, film scores and cover albums. The lineup has always been Ira and Georgia, and since 92 they've had James McNew on bass, but apparently during the first couple of years they went through 14 different bass players.
What?
So.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But James McNew isn't McNew anymore, then.
Is that?
No.
Is that because none of the previous bass players were tall enough? Because he's a lot taller than the other two.
Yeah.
It's like if the other two, if Ira stood on George's head, then they'd probably be about the same sort of height as James.
Oh.
Yeah.
Are they going for that kind of visual, do you think?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that'd make a good album cover.
Yeah.
Actually,
do you reckon for
they'd probably
covers,
like that?
Perhaps he isn't that much taller than them, and then perhaps they're doing like Peter Jackson was doing in Lord of the Rings, and just doing forced perspective, and
you
he's
know,
always a lot closer to the camera.
Their album, Summer Sun, in 2003, the cover of it actually has them wearing coats. And
fascinating.
And yep. No. The thing is, they we just love album covers. That's all. But they'd done a whole like two reels of photos of them in swimwear, and then the photographer at the end said, "Oh, can I have a photo just for my collection of you with coats on?" That and then that was like the one that ended up getting used.
That sounds like the photographer's got a weird coat fetish.
It sounds like the reverse, doesn't it? Yeah. Okay, can we try something without the coats now, kids?
For my collection. I have this collection of American indie rock bands
in their coats.
So the
coat. This one's Wilco in a duffel coat.
The band's name, actually, Yo Lo Tengo, is Spanish for "I have it," and
it is.
They took it from a baseball anecdote. Apparently, during the 1962 season, the New York Mets center fielder Richie Ashburn and the Venezuelan shortstop Elio Chacon.
What's a shortstop, Tracy?
I have no fucking idea.
I don't know either.
I read this off.
I believe that's one of the people who is near the catcher.
In the rye?
No.
Anyway, so these two players would often find themselves colliding when going to catch a ball.
Were they just not looking where they were going?
Looking at the ball.
Oh, yeah, good point.
So when Ashburn went in for a catch, he'd scream, "I've got it, I've got it." But then he'd run into Chacon, because he only spoke Spanish and didn't know what "I've got it" meant. So their coach taught the rest of the team "Yo Lo Tengo," the Spanish for "I've got it." So when they were going for the ball, they'd be going like, "Yo Lo Tengo, Yo Lo Tengo." Except one player hadn't been at that team meeting. And so the next game,
he was wondering why they were shouting the name.
Yeah,
of
so the next game
from many years.
Chacon was going for the ball, so Ashburn backed off, because he was going "Yo Lo Tengo," and this left fielder Frank Thomas, who didn't understand Spanish and had missed that meeting, ran straight into him, and at the end of it, he said, "What the hell is a yellow tango?" So. I liked that.
Excellent. I like, yeah.
But, I don't know. I think Yo Lo Tengo, they're an odd band. They're kind of... You're going to pull me up on this straight away and make me justify it, and I can't. But I think they're quite avant-garde.
They have their avant-garde moments, definitely.
They're quite experimental.
Yes.
But without trying very hard, they've kind of got an effortless warmth about them. That I can't describe.
See, I think part of that is Ira Kaplan was previously a music journalist. His job was, I think it was mainly reviewing records.
Yeah.
And you can absolutely tell that they're a band of music nerds, which is why I think that they do not translate to non-music nerds.
Yeah.
And a lot of actual music nerds. There are some people that absolutely fucking love this band, but they're so hard to get into.
I honestly, it was very wallpapery for me.
Yeah.
It sounded like, oh, who's that shoegaze band that you hate?
Slowdive.
No, that's the one that
that's
Tracy
the one
hates.
That I hate.
Tracy hates. Which shoegaze band do I hate?
You're probably not even going to call them shoegaze. No. Jesus and Mary Chain.
Oh,
they
right,
just sound
yeah.
Fucking weak ass Jesus and Mary Chain at times to me.
Well,
they've got the elements of noise and feedback of Mary Chain, but then and even like the Velvets influence is there with the Mary Chain as well.
Well, they change. This is what I think about him being a music journalist. Mm. I have the same problem. When I'm making music, I want to make so many different fucking styles of music that not many people are going to want to listen to a whole album. You know, if I wanted to put out an album where one track was a Nick Drake type folk song, the next track was Aphex Twin drill and bass kind of stuff, it's going to give it a fucking limited appeal. And this is the issue.
And that's
what
Yo Lo Tengo do.
There's not much coherence.
From the playlist that you did, I did not get that at all.
Yeah, Tracy's playlist was quite similar.
Yes.
Possibly because I was pushing the ones that I thought represented the a particular sound of theirs most. But then if you take one of their albums, I think the best example is I Am Not Afraid of You and I Will Beat Your Ass.
Which is a brilliant album title.
It is.
But they're like
it's representative.
They're like 5-6 different bands across the different tracks of that album.
I honestly wish I'd got that. I wish you'd done that on the playlist.
To be honest, I gave up on your playlist. I listened to it a couple of times, and then I listened to Spotify's This Is Yo La Tengo, which is a much more varied kind of thing.
I guess it's hard for me not to just push my favourite songs on the playlist.
Of course, and it's always going to be the way.
I generally, for bands that are varied, I generally just go out of my way to be like, right, this one sounds fuck all like this one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, I'm not going to try and school you in playlist. I mean, I feel like I should, but I'm not going to.
I mean, I put on some of their covers on there because they...
Oh, that Cure cover was fucking awful.
They do a lot. I think there's at least one cover on every album, pretty much, isn't there?
Yeah, they tend to take that approach.
They've done about 3 complete albums of covers.
One of their favourite things to do is have an album where it's a couple of covers, a bunch of new songs, and a couple of reworkings of songs from a previous album.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So you kind of get... different moods and how they were feeling about that song at that point
in time. Which I suppose can probably make it even more difficult to get into them, because if you hear one song that you really like from them and then you go in a record shop and you go, oh great, it's on this album.
Yeah.
But it's actually, that's a later version of it where they've changed it.
And it's a completely different version, because one of the ones I put on the playlist, Deeper Into Movies, that's on I Can Hear the Heart Beating as One from 97.
Yeah.
Which... I put that earlier version on, which got loads of distortion on it, but then they did it again on Stuff Like That there in 2015, and that was much more laid back with sort of a lot of acoustic, atmospheric reverb. And yeah, they tend to do that. They just play around with them. I mean, that's why I think they're kind of experimentally.
I like that idea. I like the... I mean, Eels live, obviously, as we've discussed previously, they'll have a completely different arrangement and change the genre even of what they're playing, but they tend to keep that live. I think that's quite a cool idea of reworking older songs.
No, I like that.
But on the covers front, they have got one entire album just of covers.
There might be a couple of originals on some of them.
Yeah, Yo La Tengo is Murdering the Classics was in 2006, and it was actually an album brought together of different sessions, because there's an independent radio station, WFMU, that was local to them, and they always used to go and do a session once a year with them.
Wasn't it that they got...
they got listeners to pledge money to the studio.
And request a song, and they used to just spontaneously... work it out and play it on the air.
Yeah,
is quite good.
So between 96 and 2003, they collected a load of these covers and put them together on an album. And, you know, and they're quite diverse because they were requests. But then the ones they picked to do themselves are usually quite diverse. But, I mean, the ones I put on the playlist, a famous cover of theirs is the Daniel Johnston cover of Speeding Motorcycle, which I adore. It's a cult indie classic.
I was going to query that.
The Pastels covered it.
Two songs about motorcycles on there, and they don't sound like they give a fuck about motorcycles at all.
Oh no, because of course they covered Little Honda, the Beach Boys' Little Honda.
Both of them covers. So yeah,
but they do love a cover, and they don't really do much with them either. They're fairly faithful covers, just in that shambling, laid-back Yo La Tengo kind of style.
Ding! Tracy Bingo.
I feel like they're a band that I'm supposed to like more than I do.
Mm. I know what you mean.
They're a band that, if you're a music nerd, you are supposed to like. And because I was having a bit of difficulty grasping it, what it is that people dig about them, I go to a vinyl night, which is a meeting of other music nerds once a month, and asked around a couple of my mates that go there, and there were 2 or 3 of them that have bought Yo La Tengo records and tried to get into them but just not found anything to grab them. Mal's got a box set and said that
the Prisoners of Love collection,
he said it's not really something he's persevered with.
That was their Matador years.
I did. There's on I Can Hear the Heart Beating as one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few tracks on that that I really dig. Autumn Sweater is great.
Yeah.
When they try and go a little bit more sort of funk, where there's a bit more of a beat behind it, I think that's pretty cool.
I mean, I like the feedbacky ones.
The sort of Sonic Youth kind aping ones.
Yeah, they really do sound Sonic Youth sometimes. But ones like Deeper Into Movies or Sugar Cube, or especially the opening for I'm Not Afraid of You and I'll Beat Your Ass, Past the Hatchet. I love that song. It's one of their best noisy ones.
Yeah.
But then I love the quieter. I love the really gentle Georgia song ones. Yeah, the ones that Georgia sings. You know, it's like something like Polynesia from the last album. There's a Riot Going On. They're kind of like different bands in one.
So the thing is though with it. There's a riot going on, yes, but it's a quiet riot.
Yeah.
But it's not anything like Quiet Riot either.
No.
Thankfully, actually, in that case.
Do you like Sugar Cube? Because I know you watched the video to it.
I love the video. It's an all right track, but the video for Sugar Cube is fucking hilarious.
It's a School of Rock video.
It's basically it starts off with them presenting their new video to the record company execs. And the record company executive saying, "I'm sorry, we're not putting that out. Do you want my children to starve?" That kind of thing. And sending them to rock school where they've got a teacher with Gene Simmons makeup. Basically, they're getting taught to put their foot on monitors and that kind of thing. Yeah, it's definitely worth watching.
But there's a lot of humour in Yerma Tango.
See, I missed nearly all of it until this morning when I watched that video. One of my things that I thought is they're a bit like They Might Be Giants with all the fun bits removed.
No, they've none of the fun removed. They're like They Might Be Giants, but a lot better.
I will fight you.
And so will Helen.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife will kill you.
Oh no, I adore They Might Be Giants. I really do. I don't think they have the same indie cred.
Oh no. Well, depends who you ask. I think they years ago They Might Be Giants may have had more.
Yeah. Don't Let Start is one of my favourite songs ever.
I think part of the issue is they're a little bit lethargic sounding sometimes. They remind me of the Beta Band a lot.
Yeah, I can see that.
But then there's so many bits that remind me of other bands who I'd rather be listening to.
But the lethargy is one of the things I love about them, though.
Yeah.
It is. It's just that hardly trying, but
I have to
effortless
be,
cool.
Or Barnaby hardly trying.
Yeah, Barnaby hardly working. I love that song.
But then I've been... The whole time I've been trying... I think I've probably listened to more Yerma Tango than any of the other bands that we're... that we're covering in today's recordings, because we're doing two episodes today. And I've really, really tried, but, I mean, this morning I found this record by another band that I was going to put a Yerma Tango record on, and then I found this band called The Condo Fucks, and I put that on instead, and it's this garage rock record, and it's fucking amazing, but it's...
You know The Condo Fucks is Yerma Tango.
Yes, I do. I was building up to that, Tracy.
Yeah.
The Condo Fucks record's fucking great.
It is great. I mean, that's another one with, like, very eclectic covers.
It is a fictional band that they're claiming to be, that, you know, they're claiming isn't Yerma Tango. And it's a covers album where they're doing all, it's like sort of 60s and 70s garage rock.
There's the Troggs, the Faces, the Beach Boys.
A really fucking good cover of Goodbye to Jane by Slade on there.
It's brilliant, yeah.
But the album, it's sort of it's called Fuck Book, which one of their earlier covers albums was Fake Book.
Mm.
It's allegedly produced by Mutt Lange, mixed by Bob Clearmountain, and mastered by Greg Calbee, who are all legendary rock producers. But we're fairly sure that that's a lie. I think that's just part of their the sleeve notes. There's this old. Like backstory about the band,
Kid Condo and Georgia
Yeah.
Georgia Kondo.
Yeah. Which Kid Kondo, obviously a reference to Kid Kongo Powers.
Yeah.
It's fucking great. I've really loved it. It's only about half an hour long, and it's... They're all played in kind of like Stooges-style garage punk. And it's... Whereas I was getting this sort of lethargic vibe from most of the rest of the stuff I was listening to, that... there's energy there, and it's brilliant. I loved it.
I've just worked out, after doing some sneaky research, who I keep confusing Yola Tenga with name-wise, and why I was every time I put them on, I'm disappointed. Because Terra Melos.
Right.
It is definitely a musician band.
Yes.
Because Nick Reinhardt is fucking mental.
I don't know
as a guitarist.
I'm not sure if Yola Tenga are a musician band or just a
music
nerd band. It's I mean, what was that Onion article?
The Onion article. 37 record store clerks missing and feared dead in the aftermath of a partial roof collapse during a Yola Tenga concert. it's so funny, actually, the references in that, the niche references.
It's the main thing that comes to mind whenever a lot of people think of Yola Tenga. I think that article is probably more well known than their music.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I knew, I read someone's Toppermost article on Yola Tenga, which is where I picked up on that. There's some fantastic bits in it, actually. They say that part of the news story is, all I can do is wait and pray they'll find them, said Bert's Discount Records owner, Bert, who lost Clark's Todd and Dan in the collapse. They were going to start an experimental math rock band together. Dan had a really nice Moog synthesizer and an original pressing of the first Squirrel Bait EP. I love it. There's another bit. It was horrible. I saw all these people coming out and bleeding and dazed. I gave up my vintage Galaxy 500 T-shirt just to help that guy, some guy bandage his arm.
Yeah.
how long have you been into them? Have you been sort of way back with them, or is it?
No, not really. The first one of theirs I got was I can hear the heart beating as one.
Did you get that at the top?
No, but that's from 97. But I got it in around 2005, and then I got I Am Not Afraid of You, which came out the year after in 2006. And then I bought the Prisoners of Love compilation around the same time in 2006, which kind of got me up to speed with them. So, no, 2005, so...
Okay.
No, I didn't know them before that. They were introduced to me by a friend back then. And I've only seen them live once. I missed them a couple of weeks ago.
I was
going to
say, they were fairly recently played Nottingham, didn't they?
Yeah, it was a warm-up gig for Green Man, and I just couldn't get across for it. Nottingham's an arsehole for me to get to, unless I drive, and, you know, I hate driving to gigs. So I haven't been there from the beginning, by any means. But
you're there now, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, and they do a lot of collaboration stuff as well. And, you know, I think you're right about them being a music nerds band, and other musicians are into them. And,
yeah. A lot of comedians are as well. The video we were talking about earlier, where it was going back to the rock school thing.
Oh, yeah, Shit
Cube. There's quite a few sort of comedians in that. And they've been... You've got people like Amy Poehler has been on Saturday Night Live wearing a Yola Tenga T-shirt and various people like that. I think they're a sort of cult act that I think get passed on probably quite a lot by people touring. They talk to other musicians and comedians as they're touring, and they go, have a listen to that, and you...
I watched a YouTube video of them from Yola Tenga playing Glasgow in 2013, and they got Stephen Pastel to come up on stage and sing.
Met him the other week. Nice bloke.
I know you did, he bastard. He's adorable. They got Stephen Pastel to come up and join them and sing Different Drum, which is a Mike Nesmith song, but the Pastels did a version of it in the 90s.
Lemonheads did that as well.
Yes, they did,
because the first time, famously. First time I ever met Tracy was at a John Peel memorial DJ night, where you had to bring your own songs to be played, and you brought the Lemonheads version of that.
Yeah, and a full CD
that you bought that day.
Yeah.
She's cheating.
I know. But no, so he got them to come up on stage and oh, it was such a shambolic performance. And despite Stephen having the lyrics written in front of him, he still completely fucked it up. He kept coming in too early. He missed entire sections of the verse. And Ira was just smiling at him as he just fell to pieces there. But Yellow Tango have collaborated on an album with Jad Fair as well, Strange But True, in 1998.
Which that... who was it that collaborated with them? Wasn't it somebody from Teenage Fan Club?
Well, they did a whole album together with Jad Fair.
That was it.
But there's also a Norman Blake album, a much later one, from 2015, Yes, I think it was. But that was just Norman Blake with Jad Fair. Yes. But Jad Fair has also collaborated with the Pastels as well, coming full circle. Right. So,
and fair enough.
I love all these little sort of band crossovers and sort of stuff like that.
Indie rock family trees.
Yeah, yeah. but I think Yellow Tango is one of them bands that a lot of British musicians really like. I don't think they're so much an American musicians band.
Oh, I don't know. The perception I've always had of them is American indie rock fans.
I assume they're American.
They are. But I think they are bigged up more here, is what I mean.
Maybe that's just my perception.
Yeah, my perception. Yeah,
therefore you're not in the same circles in America where they're being bigged up.
Whereas,
like, there might be some fucking people sat on a sofa right now doing a podcast about them in America.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Going, I don't think anyone listens to them in England.
Yeah.
I think my perception of the fact that they're fairly big in indie rock circles in America is probably because I listen to probably more American music than you. Not American Music Club, but American music.
Tracy solely listens to Scottish jangly indie.
Yes.
Largely.
With atonal singers. I think we need to speak about something more beardy.
Yes.
We do.
So I'm going to talk about ZZ Top.
Okay.
ZZ Top, or ZZ Top to some people, is an American rock band. I would go with bluesy rock band.
Ah, an American.
Ah.
You keep fucking doing this.
It's because it's... Well, I compensated by saying ZZ.
Yeah, true.
So, you know, they are an American rock band formed in 1969 in, unsurprisingly, Texas. Houston, Texas, in fact.
Yes.
Since 1970, they've had the same lineup. So I believe that they are the longest-running continuous
band. Impressive.
With the same. So it's vocalist, guitarist Billy Gibbons, bassist, vocalist Dusty Hill, and drummer Frank Beard.
Who doesn't have a beard?
There's the QI Claxon.
I don't even care.
I fully expected Tracy to say that.
I was absolutely going to wait for someone else to say it.
The one fact that everybody knows about ZZ Top is that they've got really long beards, except for Frank Beard, who hasn't got one.
Do you think... I feel like that's deliberate at this point, though.
I believe so. And also, he has got a beard. It's just not
Except when they grew their beards, it wasn't... It was when they were on their hiatus.
Yeah, they didn't have the really long beards till late 70s, early 80s.
But when they went on hiatus, they went all like off travelling separately, and when they sort of got back together, two of them had beards, so...
And they were like, fuck it.
I feel they may have communicated about that, because it's a massive coincidence for them to have absolutely fucking identical beards when they came back.
Beards are not known for their randomness, though.
I was going to say...
I let my beard grow. Fucking ages.
Do you reckon Frank...
So did I.
They looked so similar. Do you reckon Frank got there and was... Frank turned up one day and he was like, well, I fucking missed this memo.
Yeah. All right, pricks.
But he'd been called Frank Beard for years before that.
Is that because it's his name?
It is because it's his name, yeah. So,
Do you know that,
They didn't call him Frank Beard, ironically.
Frank No Beard.
His actual name is Frank Johnson.
No, they got their name in the early days. Billy Gibbons used to work in a chain Italian restaurant.
Okay.
And the top half of his uniform that he had to wear was his Zizzy Top.
That's not where they got the name
it's not.
From.
It's not. Of course it's not. I don't think they had Zizzy in Texas in the...
Fucking hell.
No, it was Billy Gibbons was looking at his blues record collection.
Yeah.
Where there was B.B. King and there was ZZ somebody. And originally he thought, let's just combine those and call it ZZ King.
ZZ. Ah. ZZ. ZZ Hill.
Yeah. That was it, ZZ Hill.
He was another Texan blues singer.
So they thought,
the
we'll go with ZZ King, but that sounds too close to B.B. King because it's ZZ King. So they
of course, CC Peniston is a massive ZZ Top fan as well.
CC Peniston.
Exactly, that was the whole thing. Like, oh, I like ZZ Top, but CC, that's a bit more motorbikey, and also my songs sound like penises.
Anyway.
But then they said the king is going at the top.
Exactly, so they went with ZZ Top.
Tim's actually called them. Tim was listening to them when I was doing research. In fact, I was listening to his copy of Eliminator. And he said they're...
So he's got legs, then?
Yes. And he said they're a southern status quo.
Yeah.
And that's not an insult, either.
No.
He says they do one thing, but they do it well.
Yeah.
I
think they're more entertaining than status quo.
Yeah. Very much so. But he also thinks... whoever produced their 80s albums wanted something more akin to line dancing on speed.
Yeah,
fair enough.
I thought that works.
I first got into ZZ Top in, would have been early 90s, when the Greatest Hits album, ZZ Top Greatest Hits, came out in 92, I think it was, which was nearly all just the 80s stuff.
Yeah.
There were some of the 70s tracks on there, but they were the ones that they'd remixed to put the synthesizers and drum machines all over it, like they'd to make them sound like.
Yeah.
Because for years, you couldn't get... all of the CD reissues of the 70s stuff were the re-recorded versions with the synthesizers to sound like the 80s.
Oh. So they were like, no, we've always sounded like
yeah.
Even before keyboards that sounded like these keyboards existed,
yes.
We had them before them. We had them first.
They were actually quite influential in bringing keyboards into that kind of rock sound.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Eliminator is the main album where the synths and the drum machines took over, and it was it was basically a Billy Gibbons and the producer solo album. I can't remember the fucking producer's name, actually.
I don't know his name, no.
I'm sure I'll be able to find it, but...
It sounds like it should be Mutt Lange, but probably...
Is it? No, it wasn't anyone, like, massive name like that.
Oh.
I remember ZZ Top, basically, in the 80s, around when Eliminator came out. In fact, I was... we had a CB radio in the 80s.
Amazing.
Of course, yeah.
And someone who lived round the corner in our village used the CB handle Sharp Dressed Man.
nice.
He wasn't... I suppose he was a Sharp Dressed Man for the 80s. He didn't look like ZZ Top. He looked more like Don Johnson in, the sort of white suit and the...
Don Johnson was pretty fucking sharp.
Sleeves pushed up and... his name was Nigel.
Miami Vice.
Had a bit of a crush on him.
He's fucked it now, hasn't he?
Yeah.
The producer was Bill Hamm. Who's their manager? But yeah, basically, it's got synths instead of the bass.
Yeah.
So Dusty Hill pretty much didn't do anything on it, and the drums. I'm fairly sure it's a drum machine, but I've heard Billy Gibbons claim that Frank Beard was playing acoustic drums, which they then used as triggers for the drum samples.
Which would be massively predating, because that's a metal thing now.
Yeah.
Like, have you heard the Rollins Band stuff? Well, it's a Black Flag story. It's one of their first UK tours. And they like fucking hated the audience because like the audience were just being such pricks to them, so they started playing Eliminator on repeat for the entire time before they came on stage.
I'd have loved that. It's a great album.
Yeah, but imagine the people who are coming to Black Flag gigs.
Yeah.
Another Keith from Twitter story. He's from North East Scotland. He's an Aberdeen FC supporter, and he used to get the away the coach to away games. And he said there was someone on that coach that always used to get the driver to put his Eliminator tape on, and so they just used to play Eliminator on loop for every away game. Nice. And it drove him mad.
See, my favourite thing about Eliminator, so it was their eighth album.
Yeah.
Their albums leading up to that, there was ZZ Top.
Wait, Eliminate or?
No, it's better than that.
Oh, cool.
So their first album was ZZ Top's first album.
Yeah.
Their ones after that were Rio Grande Mud, Trey Hombres, Fandango, Tejas, Diguelo, El Loco, and then Eliminator, which was their first record since the debut album that didn't have a Spanish word in the title. Apart from the fact that Billy Gibbons then claimed that it was Eliminator. Which is great.
Nice.
I mean, I loved the band that Gibbons had before ZZ Top, the Moving Sidewalks. Yeah, I kind of discovered them.
Sort of garage rock kind.
Yeah,
of
yeah, 60s garage rock band, very much influenced by the 13th Floor Elevators. Gibbons was friends with Rocky Erickson.
I think the name is because of that.
It was inspired.
Like, yeah,
very much inspired by Rocky Erickson. I mean, and they did well. They had a couple of singles out. They opened for a lot of other bands. They quite famously played with Hendrix a lot and The Doors.
Hendrix gave Billy Gibbons a pink Stratocaster, which he's apparently still got.
Oh, wow. I mean, the original members of the Moving Sidewalks reunited to do a one-off show in 2013. And ZZ Top actually feature on a Rocky Erickson tribute album with a cover of Reverberation.
Oh, I need to hear that.
Which is cool. Yeah, really good cover.
When did they record that?
I don't know. When did that album come out, that tribute album? Because it's...
Don't know.
It's called Where the Pyramid Meets the Sky, the album.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, do. It's a good cover.
Do you know the connection between ZZ Top and the Zombies?
No.
Okay, so the Zombies, the sort of 60s...
I like the Zombies.
I know you do, that's why I thought I'd ask if you knew this one. So the Zombies had obviously hits with She's Not There, and what was the other one that was their really big hit?
My mind's gone blank, sorry.
Okay, anyway...
And I've probably got, because they reissued a load of their stuff for Record Store Day over the last couple of years, I've probably got it.
It's a massive fucking single, I can't think what it is.
Anyway,
so they had these hits, but the band had split up, and these singles were suddenly massive hits in America just after the Zombies had split up. So the sort of record company fraudulently put two bands together claiming to be the Zombies, who then toured around America. And Frank Beard and Dusty Hill were in one of those bands. So they were in one of the fake Zombies bands.
Excellent.
Wow.
And I think that's where the two of them met, in this band that was put together.
Yeah.
To go and tour for this band claiming to be who they weren't.
You know, I read recently, you know, The Guardian has a series of How We Made.
Yeah.
And there was a How We Made bandwagon-esque teenage fan club. And there's a quote in there, the opening track on bandwagon-esque, the concept has a reference to Status Quo. Gonna buy some records by the Status Quo.
Oh, yeah.
And Norman said he wanted that to sound so it couldn't possibly be construed as cool. He said if he'd referenced someone like the Moving Sidewalks, people would have thought, what a wanker.
Yeah. No, that's true. Status quo. I don't think of Status Quo have ever been cool.
Except ZZ Top or a Southern Status Quo.
Yeah, but they're cool.
They are. That's the thing. Yeah. They are, even at their cheesiest, with the rotating belt buckle guitar strap.
They are. Yeah, they've got such fucking swagger.
This. I was watching a rig rundown video on YouTube.
I haven't seen the ZZ Top one.
There's a couple because they've updated it. Yeah. But they've got. They still play the fur covered, Bo Diddley square guitars. I think they save them till the encore, and then I don't think they have the spinning belt buckle bits anymore. But the guitar tech actually has a comb so that you can comb the fur on.
That's
them.
Amazing.
Some of Billy Gibbons' guitar rig is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
So his main guitar sound on a lot of the recordings and that kind of thing is he's got this Gibson Les Paul, which he calls Pearly Gates, which he claims is the best sounding guitar he's ever found. Because it's so precious and worth so much, he doesn't tend to take it out on tour with him.
Yeah.
So, he has a programmable EQ set up so that every different guitar that he's got, they EQ it to sound as close to the Pearly Gates Les Paul as
possible.
That
is insane. Cool.
So he'll play a Telecaster and it'll be sounding like a fucking Les Paul. He's also... so they have... It's all... They're using wireless units. So the wireless unit goes into the receiver, which then goes into these EQ units.
Yep.
Then he has... There's a pedal called a Bixonic Expandora.
Yeah, which is really wanted one of those. They're meant to be fucking amazing.
Well, he's got fucking six of the bastards.
Yeah.
Which he has arranged in like a totem pole. So they're on like a stand. So they're all... They're round pedals like a fuzz face. And he has the six of them all above each other. All... Allegedly all on at the same time. I've seen a video where there was a guy who was trying to replicate their tone who reckons they probably don't do that. He thinks that's part of the sort of mythology.
Yeah.
But... As we've said before, print the fucking legend. He's got all six of them on at the same time because that's cool as fuck. And he calls it, for some of the tours, he had these on this stand, and then next to it, he got a little, I think it was like a fake amplifier that he wasn't actually using because they were going into Marshall Valve State amps, bizarrely, that he uses.
All right.
And then. On top of this amp, it's got like a fake dog's head, and he called it the lapdog of distortion with this whole unit.
Amazing.
But that's not even the best thing that they've done on tour. And this was... When you think of ZZ Top doing all their crazy, wacky stuff, you think of the 80s.
Yeah.
But in the mid-70s, 1976, they did a tour called the Worldwide Texas Tour.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Where they had the stage was in the shape of Texas. So they had to have it slightly at an angle so people could see that it was in the shape of Texas.
Of course.
So it was sloping. They'd got all these like painted 3D backdrops. So there were like different layers of scenery.
Yeah.
Painted to look like the mountains and the trees of Texas. They had various like cactuses and stuff, real cactuses on stage. And then they had pens on stage, which consisted of buffalo. Real ones, this is.
Fuck.
Real live buffaloes.
Oh, pens, cages.
Yeah.
So I thought you meant writing implements.
No, not that kind of pen, like a cattle pen.
Yeah.
With buffalo, longhorn steer cows, two vultures, and two rattlesnakes.
Jesus.
Which they took on tour with them.
You just could not do that nowadays,
no.
Could you?
Well, they discovered that it was called the Worldwide Texas Tour, but it ended up only being a tour of the United States. Because obviously they couldn't take all of these animals overseas.
Yeah.
Sounds like a crazy Flaming Lips setup or something on stage.
I'd love to have seen that.
I wish there's... Is there footage?
I couldn't find any footage where you could see any of the animals on stage.
Oh.
I found some footage where you could see that there were something at the side, but it was really grainy black and white. And I've seen like documentary footage of them touring where they've got like the animal handlers. They had they were looking after these animals. You know, they'd got vets on tour with them,
just exposing them to stupid sound pressure levels every night.
That is the one issue. It's fine, they've removed their ears. No, they haven't.
Put earplugs in them.
How do you put earplugs in a fucking snake?
I'm not really sure how
snakes
ears. Yeah, they've definitely got ears. Yeah.
They smell the air, don't
they? Yeah, I think they navigate through vibration or something like that, yeah. So it was probably horrific for them. You put them on some kind of like vibration damping material so they're all right.
So basically you've got these two rattlesnakes
like on a mattress
and they're
or something.
Making them angry.
Yeah.
That sounds sensible.
Brilliant idea.
If they had have been able to tour it, it might have, you know, Snakes on a Plane may have ended up being made 30 years earlier.
I think ZZ Top have had an interesting trajectory in that a lot of bands will hit their peak and then get slowly worse as they, you know, go further through their career. But actually, I think after Eliminator, I think more recent albums, they've got better. They've gone back to their roots. They've really gone back to the blues. You know, and if you look at, you know, there's something like their 2012 album, La Futura. You know, it's like down and dirty blues.
That's the one that's got "I Got to Get Paid" on it, isn't it? Which is fucking ace.
Which is amazing. I mean, like, you know, a hip hop cover.
Yeah.
Do you know who produced that, by the way?
No.
Rick Rubens.
Okay.
Ah, is it incredibly
figures,
loud,
doesn't
then?
It? Yeah. And you know, Rick Rubens, the master of reinventing bands. To But no, I mean, I like their really early stuff, and then you hit the 80s.
Yeah.
But then the albums after just get cooler again. So
there is nothing cooler than Eliminator. It's got the fucking Eliminator car on the front, it's ace.
Mm.
I
don't know. I mean, the thing that gets me, it's where is the line crossed between what's tongue in cheek and what's just tired, slightly sexist cliche?
There is definitely sexist cliche in there, but I don't care. It's fucking ace.
I mean, it was the 80s. It's like when people go back and watch Friends and they're like, oh my God, this is disgusting. Like, now?
Yeah.
But then it wasn't.
Yeah.
You can't look at things from the past with your modern eyes.
No.
Because
there's a line in Legs, actually. There's a line in Legs which only sounds ruder because of the American versus the English interpretation, but she's got hair down to her fanny.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it could happen either way, really.
maybe it was her beard.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Like a dwarf.
Let's not do that joke.
No, never
do. Do you know, I was on the Beardaholic website, actually.
Were you?
Okay.
Did they do a feature on you?
They did a feature on ZZ Top.
Oh, you were reading it, you weren't on the website. Okay, carry
no,
on.
I wasn't, right. Personally. And did you know that Gillette offered Billy and Dusty $1 million in 1984 to shave off their beards?
And they refused.
Using their razors. Oh, yeah, they refused.
Yeah. I've just realised, Tracy, you're the Frank Beard of this podcast.
Yep. Tracy Beard.
Yeah.
You need to change your Twitter name.
I do. I'll do that right after the...
Excellent. Do you know, when I was a kid and I was first getting into them and obviously didn't understand much about the world, somebody had obviously jokingly told me that they were Amish. And I believed them. I was like, yeah, ZZ, believed it for years that ZZ Top were Amish, until I thought, hold on, Amish people don't use electricity.
Yeah.
Not only those electric guitars, but those synthesizers are definitely electric.
You're just on the longest Rumspringer ever.
Yeah.
And just so I can keep my Steve Albini references up.
For fuck's sake.
There's an awesome Rakeman cover of Just Got Paid on Two Nuns and a Pack Mule.
Excellent.
Awesome.
I don't know that many people cover ZZ Top songs, though.
You know why?
A lot of covers bands...
Because, like, we tried to do... I think it was Shout Dress Man, and it was fun until the solo, and then you've got to play slide guitar solo for, like, literally 10 minutes. Over just the same fucking chord.
When my dad's playing, he's fine, but he doesn't do it with a slide.
Yeah.
Sharp Dress Man and... Gimme All Your Lovin' are both so much fun to play. LaGrange as well. I've not yet managed to find a band where I can do a cover of Cheap Sunglasses, but I'd love to at some point, because it's Cheap Sunglasses is in fact, I was thinking with the wedding band that I play in sometimes with Ian, we do a large amount of fun version of No Diggity.
Yes.
I think Cheap Sunglasses would work really fucking well as a medley with that.
Okay.
I think we should give that a go.
Cool.
Where was I going with that? Oh, yeah. There was an incident years ago where I could have ended up probably being murdered by a load of bikers if I'd have been slightly unluckier. Where we, there's a pub that me and Ian used to go to that we've mentioned a few times called the Jailhouse. And we're in there on a fairly quiet Saturday afternoon, and somebody had put Legs on the jukebox.
Yeah.
So I was loudly singing it in the back room as I walked out into the bar, thinking, she's got legs, she knows how to use them. And there was a lady who was a regular in the Jailhouse.
Oh, no, not Joan.
Yeah. Joan, who was one of the biker crew that used to frequent the Jailhouse,
who had no legs.
Had no legs.
Oh.
And I walked out singing It Caught Her Eye, and immediately it was like that bit where Homer Simpson sinks back into the hedge. Luckily, she had quite a good sense of humour. And
yeah, no, Joan had got a very good sense of humour, so it's all right.
Yeah, awkward.
I didn't know that she had a good sense of humour at that point until it was pointed out to me later on. It was like, fine. Okay.
Jesus. That could have been just terrible.
It could. Also, the other massively sort of inappropriate thing is tried to put some music on in the car a while back that I wanted to listen to, and found out that my daughter, who is 3, really, really enjoys listening to LaGrange, which is a song about a whorehouse.
Ah.
She likes the fact that it goes, how, 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 how.
Well, you know, why not?
She thought that was hilarious, but I probably need to stop playing her that because she'll work out what it's about at some point later on.
Yeah, maybe.
I was reading on Wikipedia about that it was based on a whorehouse called the Chicken Ranch, which was in Texas, that was open for like over 70 years. It was basically, it was illegal but tolerated.
Oh.
And there's a musical called The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Which is also about the same place.
Oh.
Right.
And apparently it was closed down in 1972, so that was about a year or two after they'd released the song.
Huh.
And that's all my whorehouse facts for today. Or ever, I think that's all the ones I know. Anything else?
Or no, are we about no.
There? I got nothing.
That's me.
Cold.
Go listen to Eliminator.
Yes. There are other albums that are good as well. I feel like that's the only one we've mentioned. But that's the one with the major fucking classics on there. But some of their, you know, just, they're great. They're fucking ace. I love ZZ Top. What are we talking about next month? Oh, it's the end of the alphabet.
Oh, no. What are we going to do?
Well, we're going to go around the alphabet one more time. Although we'll probably miss a lot of letters out because fuck those letters. Like we've done with a few this time round.
Yeah.
But this is going to be the last time we're going to go around the alphabet. So next week we start... Next week? Next month we're going to start Series 3.
This is the most Ian-centric episode we've done so far.
It is indeed. So, we're, with the letter A, I'll let Ian tell us who we're talking about this time.
We are doing Funeral Doom Purveyors.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Scandipop Sensations, Ahab.
So, we've been We Dig Music.
Bye. It was very easy for me to pick those bands. I just added a letter.
Yes. Right next to each other in any record collection that has both. Ahab. yeah, we've been We Dig Music. Thanks for listening. Bye.
In fact,
do it.
In fact, I'm even wearing my Yola Tango t-shirt today.
Do it now.
So Yola Tango are an American indie band.
Wait, no. Can we just edit out that fucking awful Schwarzenegger one, please?
Okay.
Thanks.
Shall I start
just again? Go with Yola Tango.